I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Listening to Acton Millwall Emergency Broadcasting Special, a public service broadcast made on behalf of the Real Millwall Fan Show and Acton Millwall, broadcasting from South Bermondsey.
Huge welcome, dear listeners. Welcome to another edition of Acton Millwall. We are still continuing to produce content as the lockdown. Is it easing, Dave? What do you think? Is it starting to get easier out there, or are people just getting sick, or, you know?
It's all to do with interpretation these days. Rules mean nothing.
I should introduce my special guest, which is Dave Collins. Welcome back to the show, to Dave. I don't even know if we're scraping the barrel with these shows now, Dave, but we've come up with the idea of the five best and the five worst transfers in Millwall history. So Dave and I have compiled our respective lists. I found it quite, in some ways, quite straightforward, Dave, and I noticed both of our lists are very similar with one or two exceptions, but it wasn't as difficult, really, I suppose, because there were such standout good and bad transfers over Millwall history in many ways, aren't there?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, just made me chuckle there about we're still churning out content, yeah, but that doesn't mean it's any good. But I suppose we'll find out. Just in relation to this, after the misery of the last podcast we done around the McCarthy season, this has been quite joyous, to be honest. And yeah, our lists are pretty similar. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, we listeners only just put this out today. We're recording this the same day that I issued the show that Dave and I recorded the other day, which was about a horrendous season, 1995-96. That was a bit like being on the psychiatrist's couch. So this is hopefully happy relief by comparison. So we're going to go through the top five best and the top five, if that's the right expression, worst Millwall signings of all time in our respective opinions. I found it a strange weighing up process, Dave, because the best transfers, in a way, fall into two categories for me. I don't know if you'd agree that there's a kind of a resale quality, you know, buying cheap and then reselling at some profit, and then there's a buying and getting huge value from a player in terms of overall contribution to the club without necessarily a resale value. Did you have this mental struggle like I did?
I had the same problems. First of all, I think because in my profession as a salesman, I just went on resale value and then realised I had people in it that I wasn't really confident with. So then I changed it to the other version of the people I like most. And then there was people who weren't in there who should have been in there. So I've really gone for a combination with a couple of people based on resale value who were sort of in and out of the club relatively quickly. And then three of my all-time favourite players who were also top transfers.
We've got a lot of also rans in both categories, the worst and the best. So we'll come to those after we've done a Miss World style countdown. So I'll kick us off, Dave. My fifth best Millwall transfer of all time, in my opinion. Mr. Les Brierley signed for the Lions in 1984 for the grand total of £20,000, signed from Hereford. I notice he's on your list too, so I don't know if you numbered them in the same way that I did, but I've got Les in as my fifth, number five in the hit parade. Did you give it a hit parade aspect, or did you just come up with names? And
no, I also gave it a hit parade. I didn't have him in fifth, so I didn't mean seconds for me. It was my
seconds. Okay. Yes. Higher rated than, well, that's, yeah. I won't argue with it, because Les was, it came to us in quite tough times. 1984. I mean, that was a grim era. I mean, it was part of the third division promotion season with George Graham, 1984-85. And there were some tough years to follow. And then, of course, he saw us through the glory years of promotion and Division One, all for £20,000. They stayed with us, I think, until about 1991, if memory serves. So quite a service.
And we got rid of Andy Massey at the same time.
Yeah, we did. That's right.
Our exchange, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. That was the Hereford deal when he first came to us. Interesting career, Les. I'm just looking at his Wikipedia page as we're talking. Born in Lambeth. He started out as a youth with Chelsea, but then it's a lot of lower level clubs. Hereford, Wimbledon, Aldershot. And then Millwall would not have been exactly, I know we're biased, but it wouldn't have been a glamour signing, would it, for him, from Aldershot to Millwall in the third division. But he spent the bulk of his career, the Lions, 227 appearances and 13 goals.
Yeah, I'm sure when he signed for us in 1984, getting promoted to the top division was about as far away from his mind as possible. You know, when he joined us, you know, we would have been under George Graham, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
he was rebuilding the side. You know, for me, I've got him in my top five list based on £20,000, which was a decent amount of money for Millwall back in 1984, I'd say. So we did pay a fair whack for him there. But then, you know, looking at his career as well, he's one of them few players who's actually played and done well in all four divisions as well.
Yeah. So
he's actually progressed as a player as we got better. And for me, you know, I know we played alongside Terry Urlock, and no, I love Terry Urlock myself, but, you know, Les was just like the grinding out engine room. You know, he was just Mr. Reliable, and he could score some good goals as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you, just to repeat the point you've made, I mean, he's come from Hereford, he's been Wimbledon in their, you know, third and fourth division days, Aldershot, the same. Didn't look out of place in Division One. And I think that's quite an achievement for a player that would never have expected to reach that level.
Did you Charlton and their first division, that away game when he scored that goal from
Selhurst Park? Yeah, the famous 3-0 win, wasn't it, at Crystal Palace's ground? And of course, the disallowed goal at Arsenal, which still rankles 30 years on.
What a great goal that was not.
It was not. And we were contenders, as we've said a few times. I won't flog the point, but we were Football League Championship contenders with the biggest in the game at that point. But for Les's goal being disallowed, who knows where we would have finished. He closed his career with Brighton and then Slough Town, 1992-94, 37 goals. He's still on the staff at the Den, of course. He's, I think he does match day hospitality over in the exec boxes over in the East Stand. So he's still around at Millwall. So number five on my list, number two on your list, Dave, Les Brierley. But for every happy song, there's always got to be a sad song. Every cowboy sings a sad, sad song as well as a happy one. So we must look at our worst, number five on your worst transfer list of all time, Dave Collins. Who would you go for in number five?
On my number five, I have Mr. Trevor Aylott.
Good call. I didn't think of Trevor Aylott, but he was quite an expensive signing, wasn't he, back in the 80s, 120,000, or was it 150,000 that we signed him for?
150,000 in 1982, with probably crowds of 2,500. I mean, in layman's terms, that's probably like us these days paying about £5 million for a player. you know, 40 games, 6 goals, not much effort, not much quality. Lasted one season, and then we flogged him for 55 grand off to Luton.
Yeah, basically, we could have cut a lot of pain out and just thrown away £100,000. Maybe we should have distributed it along Coldblow Lane to passing ne'er-do-wells and kind of, you know, street passers-by, because that would have been about the same amount of impact. 40 games, 6 goals. Sixes into 150 grand, what's that? That's about 10 grand, 20 grand a goal, something like that, I don't know. A very poor signing, Trevor. Local boy as well, Bermondsey boy, but you wouldn't have known it from the quality of his play, that's for sure.
It'd be interesting to know, Nick, if he was at the time, and you'll probably know better than myself, but I mean, just to reiterate that point, that is a lot of money for 1982 Millwall. And I wonder if that was that our record signing at that time?
I don't know if it must have been, because I remember for a long time, and we were going back to a different era of transfer fees, so younger listeners would have to appreciate £150,000 was, you know, amongst the bigger signings in the game generally at that point. There were £1 million signings, but only at the very top level. But it gives you a sense of how much money it was. And as you say, we were a club that were looking at some pretty grim times back then. Crowds of 3,000 or 4,000 in the den, you know, and somehow we've managed to lash out 150. Whether it was a record, I don't know. I'd have to check that. But it's a good point. He would have been... I can't think offhand anyone close. Maybe John Mitchell. We signed him for about 100,000, so less than Trevor Ayler, but a very, very, very poor signing.
Were you inspired and looking forward to Trevor Ayler when we signed him?
No, I don't remember being. I mean, by this stage in 1982, I had been ground down. We'd had about from promotion in 75, 76, and then the brief flurry of excitement in 76, 77. We'd had a relentless 3-4 years of increasing decline. Jules Petchy had done his worst. I think we're into the Peter Anderson era at this point. Increasingly you were becoming aware that there was nothing good that's going to happen at Millwall in the foreseeable future. So, no, I don't remember being inspired by him. I do remember having some modicum of excitement when John Mitchell signed for us in the late 70s, 78, 79. And I do remember John Lyons doing very well for us, but I don't think he was particularly expensive. In fact, John Lyons was about half the price of Trevor Ayler with quadruple the goal scoring deliveries. There we are.
To be honest, my number five was either going to be Trevor Ayler or another Millwall player at the same time, whose surname began with A, which I know we'll cover off, but I think you had a bit to say about it in one of our previous podcasts, so I thought I'd give you a rest Big Sam. But I'm sure we'll come back to him anyway.
Big Sam Allardyce, a lot of these shows, the joy is in the tangents. I hadn't thought of Allardyce at all in this context, but there is video footage on YouTube. I think Match of the Day covered us losing at Lincoln back in 82, 83. And if you want to know what Sam Allardyce looks like as a player, Big Sam, the Northern hard man, watch him running around like a ballerina on doing Swan Lake whilst the Lincoln players rough him up and put free past him. That's what Sam Allardyce looked like as a player, younger listeners. My number five, and some might call me harsh for this because this season is not yet over and we don't know what's going to happen yet, but I've actually put Jiří Skalák in at number five in our all-time worst transfers, because he was an expensive player, Dave. You know, and he's come to us as a Czech international. 650,000. I don't know where I've got that figure from. It might have been the Mill History website. I might have made it up. But he's come to us well-reputed, Jiří Skalák, with an international pedigree. Talk of him taking part in the Euro 2020, 21 possibly now. And I've seen nothing, absolutely nothing, to justify any of that talk from this player. Am I being harsh, in your opinion, by coming up with Jiří?
No, I don't think so. I've just realised I've thrown you a massive curveball, Nick, because I had Scalic in at number five, and then
last night,
I actually boxed him out for Aylott for some reason.
Well, Trevor Aylott never had international pretensions, did he? Never spoke about wanting to take part in any European championships, you know.
I mean, just to answer your question, I don't think you're being harsh. At the end of the day, he's got to pull his fucking socks up well over his knees and probably up to his chin to have a chance in Euro 2021. It's a lot of money, 600 and even in this day and age, you know, it's a lot of money for Millwall, and the return's been poor.
I mean, he was signed by Brighton for an undisclosed fee. This is for Brighton listeners, for 1.2 million. So they've paid, let's say, 1.2 million. We've signed him for an undisclosed fee. So it must be pushing towards the high numbers, the sixes, the 700s. I can't believe it's going to be anything less than that for a player of international quality. Possibly more if it's, you know, we don't know. But I've just never seen anything from the boy, and it's very hard to see what the hype is about Jiří Skalák. So, rightly or wrongly, harshly or not, this is the nature of the show. It's an opinion-based show. I'm going to have him as my number fifth worst Mill signing of all time, Jiří Skalák.
You are listening to Achten Millwall.
So there we are. We move along, and number four in your hit parade, Dave. Who's you got number four, mate?
Well, obviously, I had Brighton in at two, so I've got to drop back to number five. It's going to get complicated for the listeners. They might need an abacus here.
if they come this far with us, they're not worried about where they sit in your hit parade or my hit parade.
Sure, they're not. My next player for me is Colin Cooper.
That's a great choice, and I didn't think of Colin Cooper. In fact, I've noted, as you've sent it to me, I've noted him down. I've forgotten what a good deal that was. And not what a good player he was, but what a good deal it was, because signed for £300,000, I believe as a right back originally, Dave, when he came to us as a fullback.
He was a fullback, yeah, he was.
Converted to a central defender, and converted very, very well, because he was a great, great player, and resold for £1.7 million. So, looking at it purely commercially, that's a £1.4 million profit, isn't it?
Yeah, this was one of my sort of players based on finances, a good bit of business. You know, within sort of a season and a bit, you know, or a year and a bit, he was in and out. You know, we made a healthy profit on him. He played two full seasons, really, you know, and he started off as a fullback. But from memory, I don't remember him. You know, it was getting a bit criticism. We weren't a great fullback, actually. And then he moved into a centre-back and was quite commanding and an exceptional player, really. Hence why, ultimately, when we sold him, you know, what was it? Basically, we had him for just over 2 years. We sold him for £1.7 million, which back in the day was a fair chunk.
I don't know who moved him. I'm wondering whether it was Rioch that moved him to Central. It seems like too much of a visionary move for Mick McCarthy, having organised an online lynch mob for Mick McCarthy earlier on today.
It might have been Ian Evans.
Could have been. But it certainly was an inspired move to put him centrally, because he really came into his own. 77 appearances for the Lions, 1991-93. So it was quite a short career, 6 goals. A great striker of a football. He was a great, great free kick taker from just outside the penalty area, as memory serves. He used to strike a really strong, strong ball. Moved on to Nottingham Forest. I suppose that had been the Brian Clough era Forest. So he's played with some, you know, he's come from Middlesbrough, he's gone to the Forest and then back to Middlesbrough, 1998 to 2006. And that's where he's finished his career. 606 appearances over his career. He's a very, very well-established player, wasn't he, over his career. 37 goals over a 20-year career. England under-21, excuse me, and an England cap, a national team. I didn't know he played for the England national side.
Neither did I. Always welcome down Millwall as well.
Yeah, very, very well thought of, bloke. Yeah. Very well thought of to this day. And that's a rare thing. Which shows the measure of the man, in my opinion. So you've gone for Colin Cooper. I'm losing track. Which one? We're on number... don't. If you ever want to do your own podcast, don't do what I do. Number four. My number four is Tim Cahill. And I've based this, like we said at the start of the show, there's a balance between contribution to the club, which was immense for Tim Cahill, obviously part of the promotion side and then the cup final side, and just the sheer presence of Tim Cahill in the squad. But I placed him probably lower than me. There's an argument he should have been higher in the category, but I put him at number four because we acquired him for nothing from Sydney United, from Australia, as a youngster. And I think we only sold him for something. Sydney is one of Theo's less commercial deals, isn't it? £1.5 million, I think, to Everton. It was just an absolute steal, even 20 years, you know, on nearly. It still looks like a low fee. I think you have him on your list too, Dave, don't you?
I did, Nick. Now, for me, you know, I've referenced before that I'm a big fan of Alex Ray, but for me, you know, and Terry Urlock and Les Brierley, but for me, Cahill was probably the single most best midfielder because, you know, not only was the fact is that, you know, he was dynamic, he was box to box, he scored 57 goals for us in 241 games he started. Excellent header of the ball. And we sold him for peanuts, really.
We did.
Sold him for peanuts.
I'd love to have been a fly on the wall on some of these conversations with Theo and I dare say Cahill's management. And I think towards the latter part of his career, I think Cahill knew his worth. I think he knew that he wanted to play in the top flight, and that would have been Premier League football back then. So he clearly wanted, rightly, to get in on that. And I suppose unless we're all going to get there, which we'd failed to do, he was entitled to his shot at the top table. But for us not to extract value from that situation still seems unforgivable to this day. It always dents this kind of Theo as the great businessman, you know, reputation he cultivates.
Yeah, I mean, for instance, when we sold him, we could hardly, you know, and we'll go through some others in as we go through, but we didn't sell him at a time when we was having a fire sale. Lost in the FA Cup final, and to sell him for £1.5 million was basically, you know, it was outrageous when you look back now. You know, at the time we knew he wanted to go. Maybe Everton didn't have to pay that much because maybe his contract was pretty near the end. I think it was well known that he wanted to leave the club and just progress because he knew that he was probably a better player than, you know, than
Neville. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it's not a lot of money in the scheme of things, is it? You know,
no.
But still a good deal, £1.5 million profit on a player that when we got him, we was in the third division. We ended up getting to the FA Cup final champion, you know, champions of any division is good. You know, in my lifetime, I think it's the only time I've seen us win the champions.
Yeah.
88 and 01. So
yeah. Twice.
Don't happen very regularly, do they?
So. Not down the den, they don't, mate. No. So Tim Cahill, I think we need a laugh. Let's go to our fourth worst of all time. Who are you taking for your fourth worst transfer deal of all time, Dave?
Jet from the Gladiators and Duvet Boots.
Ditto. I also had Duvet coming in at number four. I feel like I need Alan Freeman's countdown music. I might dig that out. Number four. 750,000 pounds we paid for Duvet, the Duvet, from Middlesbrough. Doing some prep for this show, Dave. I mean, as listeners might be surprised, we do a little bit of prep for the show, despite what it might sound like sometimes. But I was a remarkably average career for Uwe, and he seems to have built a career out of being really not very much. There was one decent season in Germany in the late 80s, or two seasons, with Fortuna Cologne, 66 appearances and 36 goals. Otherwise, it's a load of 18 and 19 appearances, 3 or 4 goals, yeah, and a load of clubs.
I think his stock rose during that season before we signed him, when he had a loan spell at Middlesbrough and scored not far off a goal a game.
Yeah. You know?
And that obviously made us interested. As we mentioned on a previous show, we love an international player at Millwall. Normally, unfortunately, they're shit, but we do like international players. So this has obviously stirred the interest. And it is at the time as well, of when we were handing out contracts willy-nilly, and we was absolutely splashing the cash in our last desperate attempt to become a Premier League team, I think, as well.
Chasing the dream, or chasing the nightmare in Zampa Road. 13, yeah, the season that you've mentioned, a lot of average German seasons, Fortuna Köln, Fortuna Düsseldorf, 19, 20 appearances, threes and fours goals, really nothing to stand out. And then he goes to Middlesbrough on loan in 1995, 13 appearances and scores 9 goals. And on the strength of that, we offer him big money, sign him up. And we got 36 appearances from Uwe, just 5 goals. And he was a big bloke, wasn't he? He was a bit like he had the Bob Peters quality, being a big bloke, and yet powder puff soft. He just did not fit the Millwall image of what a big centre forward should look like. You know, we've gone from, you know, Cascarino and Sheringham, and then suddenly you get him.
It was a strange one, really, Nick. I mean, to be honest, first of all, I can't remember it. I'm surprised he scored 5 goals. I vividly just remember the one he scored off his arse, Palace.
Palace was the one, wasn't it? Yeah.
But to be honest, I had a soft spot, I have to admit. I put Uwe Fuchs in. I've always liked Uwe Fuchs. He was such a clown.
You're getting soft in your old age.
He didn't really have... There wasn't many people after him. I know in previous podcasts you referenced certain players that, especially the old den, where people were taken almost a hatred to, which made no sort of sense. Where I never got that with Uwe Fuchs. The people genuinely, for whatever reason, was on his side.
Yeah, the Hoff reminded me of him a lot. Similar kind of... there's a slightly delusional quality about both of them. They both kind of imagine themselves male models of some sort in a kind of like, you know, OK magazine for Germany or something. And both of them had delusions in that way. Both of them spoke about wanting to get into the big, you know, the kind of in Euro scene, the West German side and all that kind of thing. And yet neither of them delivered a thing. I agree, it was hard to hate him. You couldn't dislike him. It was something that's a bit soppy about him, really, wasn't there?
In fairness, if your girlfriend's Jet, you're going to have an ego.
Jet. So there we are, Uwe Fuchs, number 4. Both in agreement on that one. We move along, though, back to the good side of the fence. Number 3, who's your third best transfer deal of all time, Dave? Number 3.
Might be a surprise for this one.
Okay.
Neil Harris.
Okay. Yeah, well, I also have Harris in my list.
You've got him further up the 3 than me.
Yeah, you have him at 3. I actually had him at number 1 purely for the contribution rather than any... You know, I don't know we ever got a fee for him when we sold him. Maybe when he moved to Forest. I don't remember it being anything, if at all, or Cardiff.
I can't remember it. No, I'm not sure. Anything. I mean, Harris is Harris, right? You know, top scorer. You know, score goals that I haven't seen anyone else other than probably Sheridan score. Always committed. You know, I'd argue that he was Millwall through and through. Okay, you don't support Millwall, but that's not always a big deal, you know.
Can be a hindrance sometimes, though. I mean, look at John Marquess, you know. Yeah.
Would have been probably what without is, you know, problems he had with cancer, testicular cancer. Could have been, you know, could have helped us into the Premier League. Had the world at his feet, you know, him and Sadlier, really, you know, could have been great for us. So, Harris, for all the right reasons, you know, when he did come back second time, you know, when we had Wise. And all
2007.
That.
He had a spell 1998, 2004. I don't think he and Wise saw eye to eye. Didn't get along for whatever reason. So when he went on loan to Cardiff, and he actually played for 3 seasons at Nottingham Forest. Not a tremendous number of appearances for Forest, though, Dave. Only 33 starts up there and 1 goal. So not a happy time.
I always feel with Harris, Nick, and it's, like, it's not unfair because it is what it is. Life is what it is at the end of the day. But before he got his testicular cancer, he had something that he never had afterwards. And I thought he had, I wouldn't say he had out and out pace, but he was very quick.
He'd have thought.
you know, very quick fall and very quick over a couple of yards. Sheringham was a bit like that as well. He was not exactly blessed with pace. But when he come back to us, when he come back from his injury and then he come back to us again as a player, it's almost like he just didn't have that sharpness, you know. He never fully recovered, I thought, you know.
No, I mean, I've always found it's an interesting life in many ways, Neil Harris, and he's still with us, so it's a bit of an odd way to describe it in some ways. But you know, he became bound to Millwall in a way that he probably wouldn't ever have done if he hadn't have been afflicted with the illness, because almost certainly, you know, we'd just been promoted, almost certainly would have scored goals in at the Championship. The old Neil Harris, as you say, was a highly mobile, very intelligent goal scorer, almost certainly would have moved on to, I think Spurs are reputed interest. I think even Liverpool were interested because Liverpool needed a goal scorer and he would have fitted their bill. And, you know, the Neil Harris that we have now, which is almost bound intimately with the story of Millwall ever since, wouldn't have happened. He would have moved to Liverpool or Spurs and gone on to whatever, you know, wherever football fate would have taken him. He wouldn't have been a Millwall legend in the same way. And it's just interesting, the twists of fortune in that way, because the illness is what kept him with us, really. He never really looked like anything other than a Millwall player forever afterwards, did he?
No, you're right. I mean, makes my top five. Him and Brierley, the only two, which probably says a lot about who my favourite players are, I suppose. Him and Brierley are the two in my top five who didn't really have a resale value. So they were there purely from enjoyment, you know.
Millwall factor, yeah, I agree. And I think that's Neil Harris, playing legend and a very, very good record as a manager. So, you know, that binds, he'll forever be Neil Harris of Millwall, and even though he's managing other clubs, I think that's just how fate has taken him. Hide him at number three, at number one, actually, for the what you might call the cultural impact rather than the financial impact. But my number three, so I'm looking down, I have George Saville at number three, purely on the, I mean, he's the biggest prophet of the lot. I mean, as I said a couple of times, you're weighing up the kind of the Neil Harris style impact of a player versus the sheer money that George Saville generated. He signed for something between 450 and 750 thousand, and then sold for, I believed to be, £8 million in 2017. Great player, George Saville. Again, oddly, another player that's looked at his best at Millwall and never really seems to ignite anywhere else, does he? Some players find their, whether they like it or not, they find their theatre at Zampa Road, and there's a struggle for them perhaps to accept it, but that's where he was at his best, at his most effective.
You're right. I mean, we had him on two loan signings before we actually then finally did sign him, and, you know, he seemed to enjoy his football down at Zampa Road better than anywhere else. This is interesting as well, because this is what makes this sort of top five transfers. Because if he was talking about these are my favourite players or my top five players, then in fairness, George Saville wouldn't get a looking.
But when
top five transfers, just on the revenue generated from having him literally in and out in a very short period of time and making such a massive profit on him, he has to be in that list of top five transfers of all time.
Again, he's got a bitty career, Dave, when you look at it. I mean, he's come from Chelsea. I think he came through the Chelsea system as a youth. Loaned to us. He's loaned to Brentford. 50 appearances for Wolves. Bit of loan to Bristol. Loan at Millwall again. Millwall to sign for. And then Middlesbrough, where, again, he's probably had his best season last season for him, but not really. He doesn't seem to generate the love wherever he goes. He's a decent player and certainly would have made a difference for us. But he's no Jed Wallace in terms of building a relationship with the fans. You know, I mean, Jed is still highly thought of at Portsmouth. I don't know what level at Wolves, and certainly at the Den. Whereas George Saville is I don't know, he always feels like he's passing through somewhere rather than staying, doesn't he?
Yeah, and, I've heard people say about, you know, we should be looking at maybe getting him back if we can get a good sort of offer for him and all that. But, yeah, I'm not too sure, you know, whether or not he's so good he could come back again. I think that's a good point about him passing through clubs, you know.
I mean, it's interesting. We don't know how this season's going to pan out yet, and that we've got loans like the likes of Ryan Woods and Jason Malumbi, both players that are certainly the equal of Jules Saville. Malumbi demonstrably in front of him in terms of ability and sheer impact. So it seems that he's one of many decent midfielders rather than the standout. And he doesn't, for me, he just doesn't generate the kind of, you know, the attachment that, for example, Jed Wallace does. So I had him at my number three, just purely on the money. It's just purely, that's just a deal, isn't it?
At the end, I also had him in my top five as well, so.
For the same reasons, I guess?
Yeah, for the same reasons.
You're listening to Achten Millwall.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Too serious a talk, Dave. Let's get over to the dark side of the street, mate, the dark end of the street. Number three, who do you have in that your third worst transfer deal of all time?
I had two. I had the vodka-fueled, glasnost-ridden Russians.
Oh, those Russians, Sergei Yuran, Vasily Korkov. How could we forget them? I actually think there's a show of some sort in the Russians and their little story, because both were, we've mentioned them on the previous show. I've only just edited the one we did last week about the 95-96 season. And it's just such a comically Millwall story, isn't it, to sign these two World Cup stars and then find them to be drunkard sozzles.
Only at Millwall.
Only at the Den.
Well, I mean, we talked about this. I think we probably talked about this on a couple of shows now, but, you know, you've got two players, fat, pissed, couldn't speak English, don't have an EU passport. McCarthy's desperate to stem the tide, even though he's fucking off in about 4 weeks from now. Bobby Robson, who probably hates us back from the 1978 FA Cup quarterfinal, passes a tip to McCarthy. He obviously does his due diligence, whatever that is. Signs these two blokes. One is massively overweight, nicknamed the Tank, gets injured after 6 weeks. I think he's... most famous picture of Mill was him sitting on a football, which it could have been during the match.
I'm surprised it didn't burst the weight of him. Oh, dear.
Recently married, brings his wife over, gets pissed, goes to disco. She believes that's the way footballers are in Britain. You know, then gets done for drink driving, chins Eric Young of Wolves.
And that was it, wasn't it?
Goal, goes home.
Both highly talented players, both with different. I mean, just looking at Korkov's Wikipedia page here, central defender, defensive midfielder. You know, he'd been round the Spartak Moscow. He played for Benfica, Porto. After us, he's on Zenit St. Petersburg. So these were players of some repute and some ability. It's just if only they could have kept off the vodka, Dave. That was all that was, and even a modicum of attention to training. I'm just looking at Uran, who I thought was a decent player and played more times for Millwall, 13 appearances. Again, he's come from the Ukraine, Dynamo Kiev, Benfica, Porto. These are not names normally associated with Millwall players, are they?
He had spirit about him, Sergei Uran in particular. Not spirits in his body, but spirits about
him. I left the obvious joke out there.
I would imagine whatever the sort of Millwall equivalent is in Russia, he would have been an absolute sensation, because he did have a bit of sort of that sort of spirit that Millwall supporters like about him. But unfortunately, he probably had more of the other type of spirit knocking around than,
sadly true,
Millwall spirit at times.
But sadly true. They moved on to Dusseldorf, Bochum in West Germany, and then Spartak Moscow and Austria.
And also, for any listeners as well, let's just be blunt about it. The reason they're in the top five worst transfers is the sort of financial burden, last straw before administration.
Yeah, because I mean that both players received hefty signing on fees, which I dare say went straight into the local pubs and off licences of Deptford and Bermondsey, I would imagine, because I can't imagine they'd have got taken long to get through that. But both got £150,000 reputedly to sign on. Both were on five times the wage of the average Millwall player, and their contribution in the Millwall shirt was less than zero. So the Russians, they exist in their own parallel universe. Kulkov and Uran, 1995. I had them also, but I had them further up the list at number two. So my third worst signing of all time is Mr. Josh McCoyd. Remember Josh McCoyd came from Bournemouth.
That is a great shout.
I picked him out. I don't know. I suppose I've had, how many years since the Russians now? It's going to come towards 30 years, about 25 years to absorb the Russians and get my head around it. But I still never quite lost the sense of disappointment after Josh McCoyd signed for us for £350,000 and looked good. He scored a tremendous goal in a TV game. I can't think of the opponents now, but he made a run from the centre circle down the middle of the pitch and shot from distance. And I thought, yeah, we've signed the boy here. This kid looks like he's really going to come to life at the Den. And that was it, wasn't it? After that, he turned into a kind of... he got injured and then disappeared without trace. And £350,000 we signed. So, again, in a litany of poor signings, yet another one.
That was his only goal, I think. Wasn't it?
2011. Just made 12 appearances. Then we loaned him to Burnley, which I think he was kind of one of Eddie Howe's, developments at Bournemouth. And I think Howe was managing at Burnley at the time. He wanted to get back closer to him because then he would go on to Bournemouth afterwards. But a player that's almost, it's got the kind of Ben Marshall quality of frittering away the talent and the career, because I thought he was a pretty good player, Josh McCoyd.
Yeah, what's interesting for me is when, as you say, doing some homework on this, what I noticed specifically about transfers in poor ones, transfers in the poor, is that really that a lot of that trend seemed to happen pre John Berylson. And once John Berylson got hold of the reins, it seems to have sort of like, we haven't made lots of bad signings. But looking at McCoyd, I think Berylson was in the club by then. And, it's one of his very few sort of like times where we've spent money unwisely. I mean, at the end of the day, we gave Bournemouth, could be up to 550 grand.
Yeah.
350, rising to 550. And then within a year and three quarters, we've then given him back to Bournemouth. Basically for no cash, but then we've got Scott Malone on our books. So
yeah, I mean that deal slightly softened it for me in a way, because I mean I always liked Scott Malone. I thought he was a decent player. I know again he didn't stick around long, and you can argue about whether he's a Millwall player, so to speak, or not. But I thought some of these deals are softened by what do you get back, if not money, who you're getting. And I thought that slightly softened it. But it's interesting. I suppose now in the cold light of day, you look at Josh McCoyd's career. He's playing semi-professionally now for Weymouth. And he's, you know, it's a downward spiral, Dave. I mean, you know, we were, and then Burnley, Millwall, Burnley, Bournemouth. Then he's gone downwards to Coventry on the slide, Luton Town, I think, in their kind of lower level days, Stevenage, Torquay, Aldershot and Weymouth. And I would have said that's a sad end to a career that promised a lot more. You know, it has a Ben Marshall quality of a kid born with something, but not exploiting it in the way he should have done.
No, I thought he was going to be good. I was actually quite genuinely excited when he joined, to be honest.
Josh McCoy, there we are, number three on my list. Who's your, back to the happy side of the street, the sunny side of the road now, Dave? Who's your second best signing of all time?
Well, this is where your plan really falls down now, Nick, because I've exhausted my five.
Have you? All right. Well, I'll go on to mine in that case.
I'll just confirm my five in order.
Go on.
For my mum, who's probably the only person whose interest is. So that's Tim Cahill, Les Brierley at two, Neil Harris at three, George Saville at four, Colin Cooper at five.
Give me one of your also rounds in that case. You've got your five there, so give me an also round and I'll come back to you with my second best.
Okay, one of my best also rounds, which is slightly... let's go very Kevin Bremner. I've got lots of also rounds. Kevin Bremner.
Kevin Bremner's a great call, by the way. Yeah.
1983, signed from Colchester for $25,000, Millwall through and through, you know. He was at a time when we had this knack of signing, and maybe it was Graham. He signed the right players because, you know, without dwelling too long on these players, because we've got to clear the list here, we've got Otto Lukowski, Southend, $30,000 the same year, and then Big John Fashanu from Lincoln for $55,000. All three of them, I've got them on my lists. All Millwall type signings, I'd say.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's interesting. I mean, I make you right about George Graham. Again, a fairly, I mean, I've never met him, so I'm speaking slightly off from the impression that you gain through the media, but a little bit like a Rioch in a sense that he doesn't strike you as a cuddly kind of guy, slightly austere in some ways, but a great, great judge of a player, just like Bruce Rioch was as well. Again, both have played at a high level, both are international players, both Arsenal connections, but both great, great judges of players. They could spot the qualities needed. I mean, you're 1982, I think Kevin Bremner came to us. You know, we're in a fight, and we need a combination of spirit and talent, and a willingness to put your head on the block. And that was that man entirely.
And to be honest, Nick, it was quite interesting going through the list. For me, there was three almost like blocks of when we signed a batch of good players. Obviously, we signed the odd really good transfer throughout the course. I've been tracking this from 82 onwards. But, you know, in the Graham era, we signed some really decent players. In the Rioch era, we signed some really decent players. Obviously, we signed some dross because every manager does that. And then the third time, we had a little spell around 97, 98. Cahill, Harris, Nevercott, even Robbie Ryan, I'd say, for $10,000. What a signing.
That's a quality signing, absolutely. What are you getting back from it? But I agree, Kevin Bremner, part of an era of spot-on judgment when we needed, when our backs were to the wall, to say the least, under George Graham. I'm going to go back to my second best in that case. So Steve Morrison, signed for $130,000 from Stevenage in 2010. Initially, we all thought we'd blown our money on a dud, but he did come good for us in over a number of spells for the Lions. I think we sold him for a reported 2 million and something, I think 2.1 rising to 2.8 to Norwich after that first spell. So on that basis alone, I said that's not a bad return. You spend 130, you get a 2 million plus back for your asset. But again, Steve Morrison for me is more than just that one financial deal. It's the kind of, if not a Neil Harris level of contribution, a major, major contribution over that decade for Millwall Football Club. And we got a lot more out of Steve Morrison than that £130,000. You know, we got our money back and some of those goals that he scored for us over that decade. I know some have it. I saw something on Twitter the other day about miserable Steve Morrison. I think they'd shown the playoff final on the Sky, doing one of the nostalgic repeats. And he's got a face on because the pitch invasion's just taken place. But that's not the contribution that he made to our club. The goals and his ability to pull situations around by just sheer experience and nous. When his legs weren't there, he could find space and find positions. And I think he was a great, great player, great signing for Millwall.
I had him in my top five, and I saw sight of your top five before I sent mine over, and I just looked at the five and whipped him out to put Colin Cooper in to have a bit of difference. But I did originally have him down as my fifth. You know, as you say, the value versus what we got back is
immense,
quantifiable, really.
Yeah.
It was a really, he had three spells with us, and they were three different spells. The first spell, he was much more athletic, and he scored a lot more goals in his first spell when he had a hunger to prove himself. When he come back in that second spell, he was clearly pissed off from his time at Leeds and was just desperate to play football. Probably his least effective spell, that one, I'd say.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, yeah.
When he come back third time, you know, I think in some ways you could say he was at his best. I mean, he scored 19 goals for two consecutive seasons and always played a lot of games, you know, 55 games, 44 games, playoff, then we got promoted, you know, we really put it in. The bonus that he hates Leeds and Leeds hate him, that always amused me as well. On that other point you make there about the FA Cup, the playoff final at Wembley, you know, sometimes as supporters, you know, we have to realise, you know, that these Millwall, as much as we might not like it, it is their job ultimately. Yeah. And that is potentially the highlight of his career. And basically, people then run on the pitch, spoil it for him. Might be a bit controversial me saying that, but ultimately, you know, it's going to piss him off. People don't always see it through the eyes of a player, I think, as well, sometimes.
No, it's an interesting one. I mean, I actually felt at the time that despite it aggravating a lot of people, and it still seems to aggravate people even now, that it spoiled his day. It didn't spoil anyone's day at all, really, in truth. But as a set of words, it probably helped soften the FA's reaction to the club, which, you know, they never really like it when Millwall get into a Wembley final anyway, did they? They're not exactly looking forward to it. So it just helped to soften the impact of what was going to come our way anyway. So I don't buy a lot of that, and I don't buy the miserable kind of persona. I mean, I'm just looking at the figures here. 273 appearances over three spells, 63 off the bench, 92 goals. If that's not somebody that's contributed massively to Millwall history, then I don't know what you're looking for. So for me, that was a top deal. 130,000 signed, and then we've even got some, you know, a £2.something million profit out of it. So Steve Morrison for me, and we've already mentioned my number one being Neil Harris. Where are we on the worst side of the street though, Dave? We never like to dwell on the chintzy net curtain side. We want to get back to the dark side here. Number two for me was Juran and Kulko. Was that your second most worst deal? I can't remember.
No, they were my third, Nick. I like to operate in the shadows and the dark side. I've still got a couple to go. I suppose that's a lot about my psyche. You've exhausted all the best players. So I exhausted all my best players first, saved a couple.
Who's your number two?
Well, I've sort of bent the rules a little bit now. You know, probably not the only one this week to do that. So I have gone for a win double/treble.
Treble. I know where you're going with this.
Slightly unfortunate. Dave Sinclair, Jason Dare and Crawford.
Steve Crawford
signs for a whopping £1 million.
£1 million. When we were broke, we rustled up a million from the, I don't know, that must have been like digging into the piggy bank and finding or underneath the mattress or in the teapot or something. I mean,
we couldn't fucking buy a prawn sandwich when we got married. Where the fuck did we get £1 million from?
This is, I mean, we've been relegated. We've done 95, 96 and another show. So if you want to really go down the kind of dark road, then listen to that show, listeners. But this was new manager Jimmy Nicholls' reaction to us plunging into the third tier of the game. Was to sign up three hot prospects from Raith Rovers, I believe. They all came from Raith, didn't they? That was his previous management job. I mean, in order of incompetence, I think Davy Sinclair is probably the worst of the group there, in terms of sheer lack of... He only lasted about five or six games before he disappeared back up north, didn't he?
He did. He didn't last very long at all. When we signed him from Raith, I've got a feeling that they actually were on a really bit of a high for them. I'm sure they was in the Premiership and they
did they make Europe?
Are you in Europe? They was having a good little spell for them. They're only a small club, aren't they? So
that's right. They
were doing very well. So we nicked their manager, nicked three of their stars, only to find out that only one of them was probably half a star. The other two were dead ducks, really. You know, Sinclair, six games, useless, soft as
shite, basically. He was sent back from whence he came. He was the man with the tattoos on his teeth, wasn't he? Jason Dare as a midfielder was not... I mean, Sinclair was just awful, but Jason Dare was just like so-so. He was like wishy-washy bland for me. He didn't make any great impact one way or the other.
Yeah, I thought he was like Phil Barber without the razzmatazz.
There we are, that's him. Sums him up. I mean, Crawford, I didn't mind Steve Crawford as a, I mean, you've probably got the best out of him. Whether we got £300,000 of the best out of him is another question, but 45 appearances, two off the subs bench and 15 goals, so I mean, that's not a bad return, although he didn't last long either, Dave, did he? I mean, you know, just two seasons. I think that was his two-year deal, and he went back to the Hibernian.
If you cut it up and you said like they were all $333,000 a piece, Crawford was a fair buy. The other two, not so.
Yeah, you've been striped with Sinclair for $300,000, I'd say, and Dare. Yeah, I mean, you'd hope someone's earning some money out of that Jason Dare deal at £300,000. But Crawford was probably the only one where you say you got something close to value out of that group. But I think that was more about the time and circumstances and the dire season that was to come. They were part of the dire season. Wouldn't necessarily put down purely.
Yeah, just one final thing on that. I personally, when you look at the time, when you look at the money, which I've never seen us spend anything remotely like that before, or probably since. You know, people forget that when people say, what's our record signing? For some reason, we never say Sinclair, Dare, Crawford, £1 million. It seems to somehow have been eradicated from history.
That's right.
It was, someone else, West Ham scum, £800,000. you know, but actually, they are the record signing. And
collectively, yeah. Well,
two of them were dog shit.
Yeah, I mean, Crawford is the only one that had some redeeming qualities, but I make you right. It was a wild, wild deal. And, you know, it was of its times. Now, we did pre-agree before the start of the show that there is a special place, a ninth circle of hell. Dante's Inferno has its nine circles of hell, and there's one person that resides in the ninth circle. And you've just mentioned, touched on it there, and I don't know if you had him in your list at all, but Mr. Paul Goddard of West Ham Derby, Newcastle, West Ham primarily fame, in 1990, for many, many years, the single most expensive footballer in Mill history, and by some distance, the most incompetent signing at that level for that money, by a long, long stretch. I don't think anyone can come close to Goddard.
No, Sinclair and they're knocking on the gates of hell, but Goddard is in it and will remain in it. He was awful. A lot of money. Again, we had this thing where we like to either pluck managers or ex-players from West Ham, forgetting that we actually don't like West Ham as a football club. You know, he's West Ham scum. But we signed Goddard. What a replacement for Pastorino he was.
I mean, in QC for the defence here a little bit. I mean, in fairness, if you contrast it with the Crawford, Jason Dare and Davy Sinclair, all of whom had come from Rafe. I mean, no fair judge could look at those players and say, well, you know, you're getting something with a proven track record there. They had a season in the UEFA Cup with Rafe Rovers and maybe scored a few goals in the Scottish leagues, and that's who they are. So you could say that's a bad deal, and it looked pretty much like that. But there was no expectation of anything, really, I don't think. But if you look at Paul Gunnard's career, Dave, I mean, leave aside the allegiances. I mean, 170 appearances with QPR, 23 goals. 170 for West Ham, 54 goals. 60 appearances, 19 goals at Newcastle. And then Derby, a similar ratio. An England under 21, an England cap in 1982. He scored a goal internationally. I don't know who against. You know, he came to us with a proven track record, not a Millwall player, I don't think. And I remember not thinking I was terribly excited by this record deal at the time, given who we'd just come from, Cascarino and Sheringham. But you could say he had a record. He was a proven top flight striker, which he failed to deliver on a grand scale for many reasons. But I think it's a Millwall factor, isn't it? I mean, you look at that, and even when after he left us, he's gone to Ipswich, scored 13 goals there over 72 appearances. He failed spectacularly with us. I wonder, is it a personal thing? Did he do it on purpose to us?
I mean, you have this cliche, don't you? Yeah, he's a Millwall player or he's not. But you know when you just look at someone and you just think, you ain't going to do it for us?
No, I agree. He didn't look the part. He nothing about that deal worked at all. I only played 20 times for us in a 2-year spell. The crowd didn't love him. He didn't love us. It's like he didn't want to play for us. I'm sure the Mill players play for injuries. If you want to play, you'll run that knock off, won't you, when you're on the pitch? But he didn't. I remember the one goal. Were you there for the goal that he scored?
I was
Manchester City.
Man City.
That's right.
Was it second replay or first replay?
Can't remember. Yeah. Well, because I mean, for me, the great contrast of football itself was, I remember well in that game, there was a boom that went round Coldblow Lane when Terry Hurlock and Peter Reid met in the middle of the park. The two crunches came in on the football. And I don't know, it didn't burst because there was like an earth-shattering boom that went round the den. Hurlock had been given the task of man-marking Reid, and I think he eventually was on a looking at a second yellow and got taken off for Brierley. So you had that kind of very Millwall, you know, the kind of cataclysmic kind of, you know, events with a man like Peter Reid, a great player, solid player, met Terry Hurlock and the rest is history. And then you got Paul Goddard scoring one goal, and I can't remember how he did it now, but he had that kind of fey kind of he would not get stuck in. It was not Millwall, was he? The worst deal.
No, I mean, you know, I always tend to find when you look back on this type of thing and you do a bit of homework, you'll always find something new about someone when you read enough. To be honest, I ain't found fuck all. He was shit and he's still shit. He'll always be shit. But it was good for everyone else, though. I'll give you that one.
Yeah, but I hold that against him because that says to me that there was a personal spike quality going on there.
Maybe he was a West Ham stooge.
A stooge, one of these sleeper agents. Paul Goddard in the ninth circle of hell exists as the all-time worst Millwall signing. I think we let him go for nothing in the end. I think it was a free transfer. I don't think there was a fee involved. We just wanted out.
It was, and to be honest, I was actually surprised he lasted to 1991. I was surprised by that, from him.
He was on the wage. He was on the wage roll till 1991. Let's put it that way. Yeah. I also want to mention before we—that's my worst, and I think by common consent, that's the worst of all time. But I just want to mention a couple of a tangent one here, and it might predate you, Dave. But Chris Kelly in 1975. Now we didn't pay big money for Chris Kelly, who was a Leatherhead player and achieved some measure of fame on Match of the Day. Because I think Leatherhead went on an FA Cup run. in the mid-70s. And I think, if memory serves, they beat Brighton, who was managed by Brian Clough at the time. And Chris Kelly achieved a kind of, what in modern terms, you call it like a viral quality. He would go on Match of the Day and slag off professional footballers because he just scored a spectacular goal and he was a kind of a non-league flamboyant player. And he achieved a lot of fame, TV coverage and so on. And we signed him. And I remember being, 14 years old, mid-70s, very, very excited to see this flamboyant striker who didn't give a shit for the professional game, was going to really tear it up, and he's going to come in and show us all that was really done. And he was wearing the white shirt at Millwall at the time. And he was Goddard level of disappointment. I mean, he came in, I think he disappeared after, I don't even think he made 15 games for us. I'll have to have a look whilst I'm talking to find out. But he did nothing at all. And I remember being intensely disappointed because there was this lack of delivery on after big talk. I think it was one of the first times I learned, and boxing builds a lot on this, doesn't it? Trash talk beforehand doesn't necessarily deliver a great fighter in the ring, does it? And I think that was Chris Kelly for me.
I had one player similar like that, I can't even remember him. And we signed him, I believe, at the same time when we signed Neil Emblem, who was in my list of transfers, a chap called Mickey Hall.
Hall, yeah, Michael Hall, yeah, I remember
Michael
the name.
Hall, we signed him for $100,000.
Did we pay that much for him?
Yeah, and then he went on a free to Barnet a couple of years later. Another one that I just got to mention here as well, so bad one, Sam Allardyce, Big Sam, I think you've covered him off.
Yeah.
Nick Ruddock down as a sort of...
Ruddock was a strange one, wasn't he? Could we pay some...
£500,000, and then we sold him within a year for half of that.
Yeah, there's a story in there, which has never really come out, I don't think. I mean, I don't think he got along with the doc, and maybe he wasn't going to be... I mean, his moment of glory is when he headed a goal against Nottingham Forest in the First Division days. Apart from that, I knew he was on our books, but he didn't know he was... You know, he didn't play very often.
No. A few others I've got down here. Boatzer, I think you had
him. Hamro Boatzer, yeah.
Barry Powell. Ricky Newman, a lot of money.
A lot of money. Scott Dobie, did you get Scott Dobie in your list?
No, but I saw him on your list. That was a great shout. Reason I didn't put him in, because we actually sold him for a fair bit as well.
Yeah, we got our money back. Yeah,
we got our money back, but he should have been a lot better. He was Gerard Lavin, $500,000. What was we doing? Spending £500,000 on a fullback, considering we bought Ian Dawes for $150,000.
Absolutely.
Richard Cadet, we paid a fair bit of money for
him. He was useless.
And one other player that I can't go a podcast without mentioning, but he seems to fall into every category that I do, and that is, holy fuck, it's Gregory John Berry.
Greg Berry, yes, that's right.
Did on Wikipedia.
Still live with that name. I can't believe that's his name.
$200,000 for Wimbledon in 1994, released on a free... 3 years later, did not a lot apart from one game at Forest.
Oh dear. I'm going to end our show on a happier note, because I think we've dwelt on the miserable side of the street too much. I'm going to run through some of the also-ran best ever signings, and it's quite incredible some of the names that we've acquired for free. So these are free signings, really, mm-hmm. from various locations. Sean Hutchinson signed as a free transfer.
Great
player. Zach Whitbread signed as a free from Liverpool.
Yeah.
Steve Claridge, technically a free player. Mm-hmm. Richard Sadlier signed, I know he was only a kid at the time, from an Irish side, I think it was St Patrick's, for free. Lucas Neal from the All Australian Sunshine Sporting Federation or something like that, for free. Casey Keller signed again from the United States Soccer Federation for free.
I had Keller in and out my top five a few times.
Yeah, I mean, one of our best goalkeepers ever. It'd be, he'd certainly be in the top two or three of great, great Mill goalkeepers. And then Kenny Cunningham signed as a free transfer.
I had that as a dual, possibly best transfer ever. Cunningham and Goodman bought separately for a total of sum of $30,000, 1 year apart. Sold in a complete and utter fire sale to Wimbledon for 1.3. I mean, if there was ever a scandal of selling people on the cheap, that was it for me.
That's the story of, I mean, in a way, when doing this, the research for this show, I mean, everyone's going to have their own views, and some will say you should have had him or you shouldn't have had him and whatever. But the story of Millwall, maybe you know, it's going to come as no news at all to many listeners, but it's this kind of endless fight. On the one hand, you're signing brilliant players, and then you're frittering it away. You know, it's like this kind of flow, isn't it? It's brilliance and, you know, shattering kind of disappointment. It's this kind of zigzag kind of quality to some of these. But I mean, even where we paid money, I mean, Chris Armstrong, I think we mentioned him, £75,000. What a player for £75,000.
Exactly. Interesting as well, 2 frees. That you haven't mentioned, where it's 3 actually. One's controversial. You know, overall, I think it was a good transfer. Dennis Wise was free.
Yeah, he was. He was, yeah.
I didn't particularly like him at the time, to be honest, but you've got to respect him for what he'd done. One who I really did like, and I forgot he was free, Kevin Muscat.
Muscat, was he a free transfer? I hadn't looked at it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what a right back he was.
Well, it's funny, actually. There was a clip on I think we beat West Ham 1-0 at home, and there was a Muscat crossing from the right, met by Dicchio inside the penalty with a bullet header. I mean, what would we, you know, Matt Smith kind of level of bullet header, met with a perfectly placed cross. What a player Muscat was. I know he had his psychotic side, but he was a great talent as well, wasn't he?
He was. It was nothing better than when he was on his psychotic side. I used to sit on the halfway line in block 44 and used to have the pleasure of him up close for 45 minutes and always used to cheer me up if he was squeezing a winger's bollocks. Or
he'd just stamp on people, wouldn't he? Like, for no reason. Because they hadn't done anything. They just wanted to mete out some pain.
And the other 3 that we both missed off originally, and I went back and looked, Jimmy Abdu.
Yeah. What did we sign him for? I haven't looked at Abdu.
For free.
Was it a free transfer, was he?
Yeah.
Wow.
I thought we paid money for him, but when I had a check, I'm sure it was free. So, you know.
Signed from Plymouth in 2008. 305 appearances, 37 as a sub, and 9 goals. And he only ever scored important goals, Jimmy, didn't he? He didn't score many, but when he decided to score one, it was always one that counted, you know. Freebie, great player.
Very honest player.
Absolutely. I'm just going to close this last, and we paid money for Alf Ward, £45,000, one of my heroes as a kid. And also a joint deal, £40,000 jointly for Trevor Lee and Phil Walker in the mid-70s from Epsom and Ewell. On one last one, Jimmy Carter, £15,000. That was a deal from QPR, wasn't it?
Now, do you know what? Again, I had Carter in my top 5 originally. And as I was wading through, he was in and he was out. I can't remember why I finally dropped him out of the top 5 because I looked at him and I thought, 15 grand. Sold for, probably because we sold him for only 800 grand.
Went to Liverpool, didn't he? Yeah.
He was worth more than that.
Such were the times.
150 grand, another great player, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I keep saying the last one, Alex Ray, £100,000. I mean, for what you've acquired for £100,000 from Falkirk, there was a player. That is wonderful stuff, Dave Collins. I think that's cheered us up a little bit, mate, because I've not long been editing our psychiatrist couch show, 95-96, but I feel more chirpy and cheerful after the best and worst transfers of all time. So thank you very much to Dave Collins for that. And for your input on that one, mate.
No problem. Enjoyed it.
Achtung Millwall and the Real Millwall Fan Show are the number one Millwall podcast, and we want to hear from you. So get in touch with us. Let us know your thoughts, your views, your rants about all things Millwall. We've got email, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. All one word, achtungmillwall@gmail.com. You can get in touch with us and leave us a voicemail on 0208 144 0232. That's 0208 144 0232. Leave us a voicemail. No human will be involved in the receipt of your message. So give us a shout. Tell us what you think about all things Millwall. And the best messages will be read out on air.
Achtung, Mehlball.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.